Well, there's been another day of crisis talks between the US President, Joe Biden, and European allies as the credibility of the Western Security Alliance, NATO, is challenged by a continuing Russian military escalation and possibly imminent new hostilities against Ukraine. Russia continues to amass troops along Ukraine's long border with Russia and its border with Russian ally Belarus, but says the West's alarm is hysteria. The transatlantic allies aren't buying that. As a countermeasure, the Pentagon has put more than 8,000 troops on high alert, ready to deploy to Europe as part of a NATO response force. Here's Pentagon spokesman John Kirby.
No mission has been assigned to these troops. No deployment orders have been sent to them. What the secretary has ordered them to do is to be ready to go, in some cases, on a much shorter tether than what they had before.
So-called lethal aid is being transferred to Ukraine from the West, including the Javelin and next-generation light anti-tank weapons. But the big question is Ukraine in any kind of position to hold off a Russian escalation? Samuel Craney-Evans is a research analyst with the Royal United Services Institute in London, and he's been writing about this.
Well, thank you very much for having me on. The support to Ukraine goes back to 2014. And the initial outbreak of hostilities between Ukraine and Russia. The UK and the US have both provided surplus armoured vehicles. So the UK sent over a few of its Saxon armoured fighting vehicles, which is kind of just a wheeled armoured personnel carrier, really. And the US supplied Humvees in various configurations, which, of course, lots of people will know. They're the vehicles used in films like Black Hawk Down, for example. So they provide what we would call protected mobility. So for the Ukrainian soldiers who are sort of driving around in areas where they don't expect to have to fight, or if they do have to fight, they don't expect it to be a serious confrontation with other heavy armored fighting vehicles, or if there are mines and explosives and things like that. So they provide a limited force enhancement for the Ukrainians. Then alongside that, there's been some lethal aid. So, for example, the US has supplied its Javelin anti-tank guided missile, which is a shoulder-fired weapon, an infantry weapon that can attack armoured fighting vehicles and other targets, other structures from above, with an explosive warhead that penetrates the armour. And then most recently, the UK has provided its next-generation light anti-tank weapon, which is another shoulder-fired weapon that launches a rocket that detonates a explosive charge that goes through the tank's armor on top. And there have been a few more recent deliveries of munitions designed to destroy buildings from the US as well. It is more about showing that the US and the UK are providing support for Ukraine, because in real combat terms, unfortunately, these weapons wouldn't really alter the balance of power or the balance of forces and means between Ukraine and Russia.
And what about Ukraine's own indigenous military capability? What does it have to respond to an as yet notional Russian attack?
Well, compared with 2014, the Ukrainian military has worked really hard to improve its capabilities. So in 2014, they had a readiness level of around 40%. Which means of a 100 soldiers, for example, only 40 of them would actually be ready to go and fight in a best case scenario. And that really meant a lot of their equipment wasn't in a usable state. It wasn't ready to be deployed. It might not have had the correct armor fitted to it or enough ammunition or anything like that. And so what they've had to do ever since, whilst simultaneously fighting the conflict in Donbass, is modernize and improve their forces. So they do have quite an extensive defense industry. It does have its own challenges, primarily because it's a Soviet legacy industry. So it still has a very large staff, for instance, relatively inefficient machine tools and things like that. A good portion of it is state-owned, which leads to further complications. But they've still managed to modernize their armored fighting vehicles, improve their capabilities, and introduce and build more armored fighting vehicles for their armed forces. So they are in definitely a quantitatively and a qualitatively better position as well.
So that's the Ukrainian side. How does Russia see this? If Putin intends to up his aggression against Ukraine, how would he do it? What's it going to look like, do you think?
Well, the Russians have given themselves a lot of options. They have deployed a considerable number of troops to all of Ukraine's borders with Russia and with Belarus. They are moving additional vessels from all the way from the Pacific Fleet into the Mediterranean. And other vessels from the Baltic Fleet do appear to now be making their way at least to either the Mediterranean or the Black Sea. They are now beginning to bring air forces and aircraft into forward bases closer to Ukraine. What this means is that militarily the Russians have a lot of ways that they can exert pressure on Ukraine and stretch the country's defenders. They have multiple avenues that they could advance from. They have most likely, if not now, then in the very near future, a numerical superiority over the Ukrainian armed forces. It's also really backed up by a considerable body of conventional long-range precision strike missiles. So they have the ability to fire cruise missiles and ballistic missiles out to ranges of 1,500 kilometers or further, which means that they can hold key Ukrainian infrastructure at risk.
Will Russia simply stand back and use that long-range missile power to assert its superiority, in which case has the West done anything to really support Ukraine in the event that that comes about?
From what we understand of the Russian concept of operations, they like to seek something called non-contact warfare, which is a strange phrase for basically relying on missiles and long-range strikes before they have to send in any ground forces. So if our understanding of the Russian art of war is correct, then what we would see is a period of intense precision strikes against key infrastructure, military bases, roads, bridges, airports, perhaps power stations, combined with an aggressive cyber warfare and electronic warfare element, as well as the forward deployment of special forces. And this would all take place before Russia's conventional ground forces cross the border with Ukraine, in all likelihood. And the goal would likely to be to make the Ukrainians an ineffective fighting force before the Russian ground troops had to deal with them up close. So that's kind of theoretically how it would look in the event of a fairly straightforward conventional escalation. Unfortunately, providing Ukraine with the means to counter that kind of escalation is politically challenging, mostly because Ukraine is not a NATO member, although there are precedents for providing similar equipment to other non-NATO members. So there are things that could have been done, but in the current state of the Ukrainian forces, they're not well equipped for that kind of offensive.
The US Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin is reported to have placed 8,500 US forces under heightened alert. Joe Biden is said to have discussed options for bolstering US troop levels in the Baltics and Eastern Europe. NATO says it's sending additional ships and fighter jets to Eastern Europe. What does all this signal to you? What are we likely to see in the next coming days?
It's an important reaction from NATO, showing that the alliance is capable of providing security for Eastern Europe. The two transatlantic partners have demonstrated, or they are demonstrating, that they are committed to providing the security for their European partners in the alliance. So the increased response from the rest of NATO in terms of shoring up its eastern flank with Russia, that's kind of to be expected in this sort of wake-up call moment. But it also shows that the alliance is beginning to take more care over its own security and really showing that it is here to defend itself from Russian aggression.
And so is NATO there also to defend Ukraine from Russian aggression, given that Ukraine is not a NATO member?
There is a formal agreement for NATO to defend Ukraine, and that is perhaps why Russia feels able to behave in the way it is at the moment. Mm.
And given what we saw in 2014, the annexation of Crimea, the sort of continuing grinding conflict that's killed many, many people since then in eastern Ukraine, should we be surprised that now we're at this moment?
In my opinion, I don't think we should be surprised. You can find plenty of examples of President Putin warning that something to this effect would happen. I believe there was a conversation between Putin and the US president in 2008 or around them where he said more or less exactly that if Ukraine was allowed to join NATO, he would capture Crimea and dismember the country. So Putin has been very clear, and the Russian political figures have been very clear for some time on their position on Ukraine and Georgia and other former Soviet states in terms of joining NATO. The thing that really has changed is that the Russian armed forces have modernized significantly and they're capable of performing things that they weren't in 2008. So now that the geopolitical situation has changed and Putin, for whatever reason, feels that there's an urgency to resolving this issue, he has resorted to the threat and possibly the use of force, partly because the Russian forces are in a better place to do so, and partly because the moment possibly seems opportune to the Kremlin. So we shouldn't be surprised, and it's always been clear that Russia would not accept a Ukraine that was not friendly or at least neutral on its borders. So a Ukraine that is leaning towards the West is an absolute no-no for the Russians.
Samuel, very good to talk to you. Thanks very much for your time today.
No worries. Thank you.
Samuel Craney-Evans is a research analyst with the Royal United Services Institute in London. More of that conversation at the PM webpage.